Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome to No Particular Hurry. My name is Dave Early. Today, I'm very, very excited to catch up with a guest who many of you will no doubt know from Twitter. She is a Sixers super fan. She brings a unique and positive energy to the entire Sixers experience and is more than willing to connect with people and talk about her favorite team. She's a connector and in many ways a community leader. One of the best parts about sports, I think, and enjoying sports is relationships we can make, especially around subjects so many of us are passionate about. For this person who amazingly is relatively new to the sport of basketball, like Joel Embiid, that comes naturally. She's associated with the Mike Scott Hive. She does sports design art for the folks at Rights to Ricky Sanchez. And most importantly, she has a great sense of humor. Without further ado, let's talk to Zeynep Javed. Hey, Zeynep.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going really well.
Good.
The Sixers sit in first place right now, and I know that
I know you
derive some of your vibes from that. So how are you feeling?
Yeah, the Sixers somehow managed to their success seep and failure seep into my daily life every day. So right now I feel on top of the world, have been typing in all caps in my works like NBA channel. So the vibes are good right now. I'm very excited.
And is everyone on that channel a Sixers fan, or do you get a smattering?
No, everybody's great. We have Suns fans in there. We have a Lakers fan too, but everybody's so, they're always so happy for me. It's really funny. My second week of work. So I had started in April of 2018. Or 2019, sorry, April of 2019. So that's the middle of the playoffs for the Sixers. Like round two just began. And then my second all staff meeting. So every Monday we have a meeting with the full staff in person. So my second one was the day after the Kawhi shot.
Oh.
So game seven, I wore my Simmons jersey with a blazer, went to the meeting, and everyone looked so sad for me.
to put on the jersey the day after a devastating loss is just a real testament to your fanhood that people probably felt legitimately bad for you. Like,
they were, everybody was thinking for my emotional well-being, like from even the Pennsylvania state treasurer tweeted about do we need to send a helicopter to where you are right now?
To you specifically?
Yeah, to me specifically.
Wow. So you're really like well known as like the Sixers fan.
Yes, in political circles. Yeah,
in political circles.
those were fun times.
And just a couple weeks before that devastating day was the Sixers beating the Nets, including Mike Scott game winner from a corner three with like a karate headband on. So what was that emotional swing like?
Wow, that was, I don't know, that was a highlight of my life. Like when I look back on my deathbed, I am going to think about this moment exactly, just word for word, bar for bar, every play that went on, like Embiid passing it to Mike at the very last second because he couldn't get a shot up. And then
it was
Mike
like saving it, I think, right? It was like falling out of bounds.
So that was just, and awesome, he was saving it and he threw it right to Mike and Mike got that corner three. And that just kind of, so we, District Sixers, my friend Rob and JJ, both the three of us helped start like District Sixers, which was just a collection of like DC area Sixers fans. And we went to different bars like Penn Social. They're like big.
Are you DC based?
Yep, I'm DC based. So I've actually grown up here in DC. So we had a weekly weekly event, or not weekly, every playoffs game, we would watch it at a bar. And I ended up getting sick that day, so I stayed at home. And I was we had guests over, so I was pretending that I'm not at home. So I didn't want to go downstairs. And that shot happened, and I am screaming my lungs off. Like, not just a yell, it was a full-on scream, a banshee scream. And I couldn't talk for the next 2 weeks. Like, my voice was
What does a banshee scream sound like?
Oh, God, no. I can't do it. Like, that'll
like a break. Shriek?
Yes, a straight up shriek.
All right. So then were you already in love with Mike Scott at that point, or was that, did that like seal the deal? Is that like the.
Yeah. So that love actually started, it's weird because I had started out a huge Tobias fan. Like when that trade happened, like I bought the 33 jersey, RIP Robert Covington, but I bought that jersey like a few days, a week after the trade. I was super excited. And then Mike stole my heart at the Blazers game, where he, when Enes Kanter was trying to fight Ben, and he got in the middle and was like, "You don't want this smoke." I think that was where the love began.
He was pretty new to the team, and he was willing to go to bat for his teammates already.
What a crazy man, like in all the best ways. He really just, I fell in love at that point.
Yeah, and Enes Kanter is not a small person.
Not at all. So, he backed off really quick too.
So, all right, here I have a quote from you that I loved. I want to read it. "Sunrise to sunset, surviving off nothing but vibes, much like the 2021 Sixers." Has this been a nice contrast from last year? There weren't the same vibes last year, right?
No, there really wasn't. I personally, like, I can talk myself into anything. I have two brain cells. Like, one brain cell will always convince the other one that things are going great. So I had convinced myself that the season was going great last year, but it was, the locker room was just awkward. I think Brett was losing the locker room. Embiid wasn't happy. And if Embiid's not happy, like, I'm not happy.
That was a big theme of last year. People saying like, he's just not having fun. I think he even said it.
Yeah. He said like they weren't, he didn't feel like they were letting him have fun, like be himself. Like, I can't remember, but that was the general, like, like you said, theme of last year.
Yeah.
And now fast forward 1 year, they have, it's really funny. So now do you know what the chain that they have now, like after, instead of Brett's Liberty Bell, they have this chain that they pass around to the best player of the game. Do you know what was written on there?
I don't think I do, no.
Okay, neither. I don't remember quite exactly, but Jim Adair actually tweeted, "Brett's little bell got fucked right off." And that's kind of, I love Brett, don't get me wrong. But that, just seeing the locker room this happy, seeing the chemistry there, I think that the vibes, like everybody said, the vibes are going to carry them to the finals. The chemistry that they have, how they work together.
Okay, that's an official prediction, Sixers and Six, yes, in the finals.
Yes.
I hope that they would get to play your colleague's favorite team, the Suns. I imagine that would be a really, really fun series to watch.
Yes, I mean, it'll be troublesome for a lot of Sixers fans who have adopted the Suns, their Western team, mm-hmm, but they're a great team. It's so surprising, like Adam Silver deciding that there was going to be a bubble was just a little domino kicking off the effect of just ending up with Suns supremacy across the league.
Yeah, they were so good there. And then they were like, we're good enough to like even want CP3.
And now they're here.
Yeah. And now they can be the one seed, the feel good one seed, if they steal it from Utah.
Yes. And Utah just kind of the feel bad team.
Yes. All right. So you mentioned that you were immediately in love with Tobias. Was that a steady relationship, or were you guys a little on again, off again?
I wouldn't say on and off again. I think that turned off for the entire season. Before this year. And he wasn't playing as well. And I think if he wasn't making $180 million, I would have loved him more. I think if Jimmy had stayed, and I think Tobias like wasn't being utilized properly, especially with Horford there. And so a year later, we have Doc. My friend tweeted this, just Doc Rivers is a better father to Tobias Harris than he is to Austin. So I think like with the spacing, like he's become a real playmaker, and even I can notice that there's playmaking going on. So I'm sorry, Tobias, like I'm sorry you made me hate you last year, and I'm sorry you made me doubt you, but you're doing really great. And I'm excited for him. I think he's like picking up on the fans, like switching over.
Yeah, there was a lot of excitement. I mean, he was clearly the leader even last year. And heading into the bubble, he was very involved in terms of civil rights and activism. And then, you know, like there was a huge layoff and guys weren't at their best. They had to jump right in and play, and he didn't play that well. And I think that combined with, like you said, the contract led to a lot of, like Philly fans especially can be pretty hard on a player. And it was a long off season for him in terms of Twitter and headlines and rankings and worst contract, albatross, this and that. And Doc has really like turned, I don't want to give Doc all the credit, but he deserves some because he was good with the Clippers. But Tobias has really turned it around.
Exactly. It's funny, like everybody was daydreaming about trading him for some terrible contract,
no offense to
Kevin Love.
Kevin Love.
And now we trust him with our life. If somebody had a gun to our heads and the whole like somebody has to drop 30 points for you to live, and I would pick Tobias. Like obviously I'd pick Embiid, but if Embiid was off the table, I'd pick Tobias.
Like if you were playing the Raptors and you knew they were going to triple Joel, then that's where you start saying like, Tobias, you got to do it tonight.
Yeah, it's all on you, man.
So you go ahead. What were you going to say?
Oh, I had nothing of substance. So if you want to get rid of that part.
Okay. You end up making friends or Twitter friends with the rights to Ricky Sanchez guys, not just the podcast, but some of the writers as well, right? Mm-hmm. How did that come about? I know you do some amazing like graphic art for Andrew Unterberger's articles.
Thank you. I really appreciate that. It was so late one night, I think, in 2018. So I had just became a Sixers fan like a few months, like that February, March, like right after the Super Bowl. I just needed something to fill that hole in my heart while the Eagles were gone. And my friend got me into the Sixers. And now
after the Eagles Super Bowl.
Yes.
Okay.
So I lived in Philadelphia.
Fandom started.
Yes. I didn't really follow basketball before that. I had become an Eagles fan in October. Just like how amazing that team was, like their chemistry. And I needed something like that to fulfill this little void in my heart. And my friend got me into the Sixers. And then the community, I was scared to be a part of Sixers Twitter. I'm like, they'll never like me. So I...
It can be a rough place.
It was scary. It's like a lot of intimidating and funny people. So I just wanted to contribute back because there were just so many great rights to Ricky Sanchez, especially. Like I was learning a lot from them, like about the sport of basketball, about the Sixers. So I emailed Spike late one night and asked, like, can I can do graphic design. Like, can I do some designs for your articles? And surprisingly, he like emailed back the next day and was like, yeah, sure, go for it.
Wow. So
the first graphic I made was a right after Summer League, like Furkan dropped 40 points.
I remember that game. Yeah. I was up like
pop the court game.
Yeah, it started really late, I think, I want to say, because it was like in Vegas or something.
Yeah. So from there, it just I did three of their live shows. So I did a branding for those. Two of the fall ones, like their I can't remember exactly, but one was with Mike Scott. I'll never forget the one where they didn't tell me that. So I was backstage. Nobody told me that Brett was going to be the surprise guest. Like, nobody told me. Like, there was no warning there. So I'm backstage just, you know, living my life, taking pictures of, like, pre-show. And then Spike's going through the run of show with the other people. And he mentions, like, he says the word Brett. And from there, I figure out, holy shit, this man, Brett's going to be the guest. So I had to take a walk. Like, I had to take a walk.
You were just delirious.
That took a moment to calm down from.
And so that's interesting, because you went from, like, not at all a Sixers fan to an absolute diehard, like, I will get complete stage fright if I even was near a Sixer or a coach. That's a pretty big turnaround, but you said it filled a void in your heart. How did they wind up doing that?
It really did. I think, like, I was going, a lot of people just, you know, go through rough phases in life. And, like, my mental health was not really that great leading up to it. So fun fact about me, for like 10 or so years, I had been misdiagnosed with depression. So that I was being on the wrong medication really hurts, especially if you're bipolar, which I got I had gotten like a proper diagnosis last year. But that kind of like put me on better medication that was more suited. But I was having these constant cycles of like manic episodes, but then severe crashes followed by clinical depression. And there were a lot of days where I just didn't want to leave the house or my apartment or honestly my bed. So I would go next door to the, I lived next door to a drinker's pub. So I would just go there to work, and I really got into the Eagles there, and like Fly Eagles Fly, the songs just kind of hyped me up a lot. And then the Sixers happened, and they're just a funny team, like Joel with Rihanna, Joel's being that younger version of himself, like just making fun on Instagram. And so from there, just they kind of affected my mood in really good ways. The two seasons and the community, like, so the two seasons where I watched, like the first two seasons were amazing. Like Jimmy Butler and Mike Scott with their ninja headbands, like how can you not feel good? So I was really at an emotional high. And I think that really just, if you remember how good they were, that kind of affected me in all the right ways. And I was able to get more help because I wanted to actually, like, was inspired to get out of my bed, was inspired to take more control of my life. And I think that just Sixers had a huge role in it.
Yeah, I can appreciate the role that they play. Like, this was a hard year for the whole world, you know, a year and a half, I guess. And some days I thought to myself, you really just have to make it until 7:30. And then then you won't have to think, you won't have to, you know, you can just watch the Sixers. And so I would look forward to that. And sometimes I would have those mixed feelings. I'd be like, should they be playing? What's going on? You know, once the bubble started. And then this year, I guess I had even more of those concerns.
Yeah.
But if you can look at it like they want to be playing, they're okay with some of the risks. The NBA is doing a lot of it, and hopefully everyone's okay. I know Seth had a tough go of it, and I don't know if he's 100% even now, but he's certainly starting to shoot like he is. But yeah, it can fill really high anxiety or whatever you're going through times and just be like, all right, the game's on. I'm listening to Mark and Allah. We got this from here and then we'll go to bed.
I don't feel good I don't feel comforted until Mark says, like, hold on, Allah, we're coming in for a landing. Mm. Like, that is one of the most comforting phrases I've ever heard.
Yeah. Well, I don't associate it with comfort because if it's tied with two minutes to go, I'm like,
it's like a scary moment. But I think like that is just, I don't know, a good luck phrase, I think, because they do come in for a landing a lot, most of the
time. I tweeted, I think, I forget if it was the Clippers game. It might have been Kyrie dropping 37 on us, but it was like, I think it was the Clippers. It was such a high intensity moment. And then the shot missed, and then they started playing the song, 3-2-1-6. And I was like, oh. And so it was such a quick change from like terrified to joy, relief.
What I love is the collective panic that we all go through every game. Like, none of us are okay. There's heartbeat issues. Like, I think, like, the Sixers fans, we're not going to live long. We have 10 years of our life taken off.
That game Spurs game. The Spurs game. Oh, my goodness.
That very last second where he dipped, I just... And the Furkan... when Furkan tied the game, like the Bucks game, and I just wasn't expecting that. Like, that going into overtime. Like, we don't have Embiid. We don't... I think Seth was out, too.
The Bucks lost in overtime, yeah.
I think we won, lost in overtime, but we took the Bucks to overtime.
That's what I meant. It was the game against the Bucks. We lost in overtime. No Joel.
Yeah, that was. I don't know. I felt great after that. Like, it was a loss, but I felt like you guys almost lost to Furkan.
Well, seeing games like that, and there was also the game against Utah without Joel. And Ben was not actually that good that night against the Bucks. I think he was like, he couldn't finish in the paint. But seeing the team run up like a 15-point lead on the Bucks and the Jazz without Joel makes me think we're not doing something that we should be doing anytime Joel takes a rest. Like, the last couple nights we had these nice big 20-point leads. We go with an all bench unit. And suddenly we're losing 10 years of our life to heart palpitations. There's got to be a happy medium here with like 7 games left, right? Isn't there a way we can like put at least Tobias or Ben in for some of these minutes?
Yeah, I think Doc just has some like fun with torturing us. Like, maybe that's his idea of life enjoyment. He gets a thrill out of that, just like we do. I mean, you feel something, right? Like, we're in the middle of a pandemic. There's a lot of just kind of pandemic fatigue. And when you're watching the Sixers game, you're going through emotional highs and emotional lows in the span of 20 minutes. And you really feel, and maybe, you know, Doc thrives off that. But
maybe he's like a gambler and likes puppet mastering our heartstrings.
It's high stakes, high thrills. Yeah, I think I would like to see, like, just kind of line up, like, bring, but you don't have to go all bench. Like, even I can get that. But I love seeing Mike minutes.
So let's talk about Mike a little bit. You started the Mike Scott Hive. I would say that's like something you're famous for at this point, right?
Yeah, so I actually didn't start the Mike Scott Hive. There were a bunch. This was like a community effort. So I was
the face of the franchise.
I'm the face of the franchise. But there were a lot, like, there were people who had a bigger impact than me actually, like, getting it started and keeping it going. Like, Zoe with the Hive Assemble, like, that was, the Hive gained the popularity through Zoe, through Matt Del Rio, who got the tattoo, which was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in my life. And then Erica Boland, Matt Del Rio and Erica kind of got their attention with his attention, and that kind of blew it up even more. I think like my role in things was just being able to like get kind of keeping building the community and or helping organize, like getting people together to organize these tailgates where just an amazing community came together.
And what was it about Mike's personality or aura that made it him?
He is, I don't know what it is that like makes everybody attracted to this man with just this role player with emoji tattoos, but it was his personality. He doesn't take any bullshit.
He oozes charisma.
Yeah, he's very charismatic. He doesn't take any bullshit. I ain't no B. And moments like he calls the team out for what it is. And he holds himself accountable a lot. Like, he does get mad at himself when games aren't going well from him. Like, even if he doesn't have a good game, like, he does hold himself accountable. Like, he really very much cares about playing. And you can, like, that just his efforts, you can notice. It's a very noticeable effort. And I think, like, there were moments that are just amazing. The Bucks game where he fell courtside and he took a sip of the woman's like Chacno Ice.
Yeah. In the middle of the game.
In the middle of the game. Wow. He got a tech. This man got a tech while wearing a polo. Like he wasn't even in a game. Like this was this season. He wasn't even playing and he got a tech for like standing in between a fight.
What is it about all of that that you like so much? That he's just a real person where you don't know that about a lot of other players? Like you don't connect with them?
I think the way he connects with fans, it's like he goes out of his way to connect with his fans. Like a lot of people would see, oh, I have a fan club. Cool. But they don't get as invested in the community like he did. So
he showed up, he was there with you guys.
Yeah, he came to our hive, like he showed up at our hive after party, took pictures with every single person. The summer of Mike, basically the summer before the season where all of our lives went downhill, he like would show up. He had these races, like foot races with people. He showed up to a wedding, like crashed a wedding. And there was a moment that was really fun. It's like when he joined a bunch of kids and did like a Nerf battle. So he's just a man who really cares about his fans, about giving back. And he shows up. And the Eagles fight was amazing.
Mm.
Like, how do you go to, and like Eagles fans are notorious for just being very passionate about their team and going in a Washington football team jersey and getting into a fight with Eagles fans and becoming more likable because the Eagles fans had said like a racial slurs and he became instantly more likable. He's just great.
All right, so, but people are kind of nasty sometimes. If Mike has a bad game, they like to take it out on the hive, don't they? Like, I'm going to read a quote from Drew Corrigan 50 on Twitter.
Oh, he blocked me. So I have no idea.
There was really a massive segment of Sixers Twitter that went all in on Mike Scott. LMAO. And why do people, like when Mike struggles, what happens to you? Do people tweet at you?
No, actually, no one tweets at me. I think like two or three people have subtweeted me. I used to take all of this like very personally. Like I have high anxiety. Like I thought people hated me. I felt sick to my stomach. Like I thought that the hive, like I was directly associated, so people were just probably making fun of me. But it really just, what I recognized is a lot of people do think Mike is a great person. They see him trying and they know he's making every effort in the world. Like he's had really good games where he's like the Knicks game where he wouldn't let Julius Randle do anything. So, and Mike did well last season in like the first half of the season. So I think people recognize that he's like one of the best human beings ever. And I muted his name. Like it does sting a little. So I did mute his name.
If you don't mute his name, you see him traded quite a bit, don't you? In trade.
Oh, every day. There were so many trade machines. Like even if somebody would put a screenshot and it was like, if it was a friend, I'd be like, hey. Not today, mother. Not today.
Do you think that there is a sentimentality in them not trading him? I know him and Elton were teammates on that like 60-win Hawks team. And I know some of the fans have wanted him traded because of the size of his contract. It matches up, blah, blah, blah. Do you think that they said, no, we just like having him around. We think maybe his shot will regress to the mean and come back?
I think so. I think that definitely has a play in it because Mike has the most tradable. You know the meme that's like, I've won, but at what cost? Like the beginning of the season with when Mike got the $5 million, like re-sign, I was like, hell yeah, he got $5 million. He's great. And he was a great player that season. Like he was coming off a really great season where I think he shot his career high. I'm not sure, but getting $5 million that offseason, amazing. And then it was like, oh my God, this became the most tradable salary on the team. He could be packaged up anywhere. So I had been having straight up panic attacks, not actual panic attacks, but like a lot of anxiety two trade deadlines in a row.
Yeah.
The first one I was at the office and I told my boss, like, I can't really, like, can you give me like 30 minutes to just wait until this deadline to pass, 3 p.m. to pass? And I was on the floor. Like, I was literally on the floor when I realized, like, he's not getting traded. I was so happy. And then this season, like, I couldn't believe it. Like, I was so happy. I had mentally prepared myself for him getting traded. I finally got a therapist and we spent two sessions talking about this, like him getting traded.
Did your therapist have to do a little homework to figure out who this person was?
Yes. She calls it the beehive. Like how is the beehive doing every single session?
Oh my God. And what do you say?
I told her, like, no, it's Mike Scott Hive. We're a little community. And I give the 30-second spiel every time, but it just, we were processing it. I was like super sad. I was getting ready to like chop my hair off again. And
that's what you would do if you were really sad and he was traded? The hair's gotta go.
Hair's gotta go. I was gonna get like a intense haircut. Like getting swept from the playoffs, like the first team swept from the playoffs. Last season, I ended up bleaching my hair 6 times. Like my hair is so damaged.
From that.
Yeah, from that experience. Never bleach your hair 6 times in a row. Like if I can leave your listeners with anything.
Let me write that down because I'm going to forget. I'm gonna bleach my hair 6 times. And so, all right, people are going to be listening to this on Cinco de Mayo. There is a little bit of a history recently. 2018 was the Marco Bellinelli confetti game. And I think, were you at that?
No, I was in Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay. Were you living there?
Yeah, I lived there for like a few months.
Is it better to watch a game on Central Time?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Like I'm washed now.
What do you mean?
I don't know. When I was like 3 years, like 3 years ago, I love late night games. I was like, this is so much fun. We're all getting just sports in bed, like Gipper would say. And then now I'm just tired. My eyes are barely open, but I refuse to go to bed out of principle.
Yeah, we've had a couple late night, like 9 p.m. starts. I think last night's against the Bulls was.
That should be illegal.
But what was your feelings on that Marco Bellinelli game? Let's just look at a couple of the Cinco de Mayo games we've had.
I was at like a, I was watching at a bar with my friends, and I am screaming that I thought that was a three-pointer. Like, I thought he was, he didn't, I thought we had won the game.
NBCS Philly still uses the audio of Joel screaming at Marco, yeah, yeah, before they knew.
I sounded like a more high-pitched version of that. Yeah. And the confetti went off. And after that, like, I don't trust anything. Like, you need, the game needs to, no more, we're never getting confetti again. The Sixers will be in game six of the finals. No, game five, because we're, game seven. Because we're going to be the first seed. We're going to be at home for this. We're going to be at home for the finals. And we're going to win the finals. And there's not going to be any confetti. There's going to be no confetti. We're all too collectively scarred.
All right. And then the next one was also bad. We lost game four at home to the Raptors. We played okay. It was like one of those crazy low-scoring games. I think we were down one and Kawhi hit a three right over Joel. And that would have put us up 3-1. So that, I mean, still have, I think JJ went on a podcast and said like, that was it. That was the finals for us. Like that was the championship.
That was the championship. They were the team. They were the team that was going to win it all. Like the Bucks had no chance. The Warriors had no chance. Nobody had a chance.
Played terribly that game, or at least he shot terribly that game.
Yeah, everybody, that was a rough game. So that the game before that was the windmill dunk. Game three was just so they had stolen game two on the road. Game three, Embiid had that beautiful windmill dunk and the airplane, and that was, my life has been downhill since that moment. That was like one of the most beautiful moments in my life.
A lot of people peaked at that moment. Yeah,
it was just, I don't know, the vibes, they were just so, they were glorious.
Is it like Joel was dealing with knee tendonitis? Is it possible that like it swelled up on him? I know they refer to it as the bleeps, like his gastroenteritis or whatever, but I always suspected like maybe his knee just kind of acted up because he wasn't the same guy the very next game.
Yeah, I've learned how to spell gastroenteritis, which is a sad thing. I'm not sure because I skipped anatomy class throughout high school, nearly failed. I got a D in that class, so I'm not the most well versed on like injuries. So pooping, I understand, but the rest.
That's a good teaser for this. Pooping, I understand. Got come listen to this pod. So you right now, you are currently fasting for Ramadan, is that right? Mm-hmm. And is it pronounced Salm? Psalm? The fast? S-A-W-M.
I have no idea.
Okay. Well, I guess the internet told me that that's what the fast itself is called during Ramadan. And Kyrie Irving is apparently doing this for the very first time. Like he dropped 37 on us. I guess no food, no water, right?
I don't think he, so it is sunrise to sunset, and sunset, it's like May. Sunset is pretty late. So he probably didn't get any water until after, like
maybe half
to the end of halftime. And no food. Like I don't think they eat during halftime. So he's just operating like on pure will, and the first Ramadan's always the toughest.
Yeah, tell us what a rookie would be experiencing.
Pain, so much pain. But no, every like the first couple of days are really tough because your body's not used to that, and you have to like just it takes a couple of days to get used to. Like last night, I was whining at 7:53 p.m. because fasting opened at 8:06, and I was just so mad at the world.
Like minutes.
Why isn't time going? Yeah, it's definitely a tough one. So, but it's a month of reflection and it's a month of patience. So it's the amount that takes to drop 37 on the Sixers, it's just unimaginable. And I'm really proud of him. Like, Mo Farah won the in the Olympics, the long distance runner, he won the 5,000 and the 10,000 meter runs. I think they're called meters, but he won the like the gold medals while fasting.
Wow.
Jaylen Brown is fasting. Taco Fall is fasting.
Dennis Schroeder, I think.
Mm-hmm. Dennis Schroeder too. So,
do you ever work out during it? Like, what's it like to not have water if you were to go to the gym or just go for a run?
I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I don't work out in general.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I wouldn't know.
It just seems impossible to me. Like, I could guzzle so much water, but just by like going for a walk.
Yeah, no, I couldn't imagine. I don't want to even get out of bed. So athletes are crazy.
Yeah, the level of commitment there is crazy. And I wonder, like, I mean, it's not like they lose many games, but I wonder if that's impacted at all their standings. So, like, maybe Kyrie would have been even better if he was just on his normal, like, able to eat and drink. Who knows?
Who knows? I think like the rest of the team like has to step up too. It's not just him. Like, they have former all-stars. Like, they got to so standings, I don't think it's solely that won't be on him, but it definitely it's a tough one. So I don't really know.
Yeah, no, not that it would be on him, but I wonder if we got him some truth serum, would we say, was there a game where you were first acclimating? Like you said, those first couple days are tough. Would he say, oh yeah, I was kind of washed for that game. Like, I wasn't myself. And we
I think so. Yeah. It's his first ever.
Yeah. It's gotta be crazy. The Sixers are third in fast break points, but they're 29th out of 30th in fast break points allowed. So is that kind of a weird thing to you? Like, they get a lot of fast breaks, but they also give up a lot of fast breaks. Is playing the Sixers just automatically a track meet in both directions?
I don't know how to answer that, just because I'm not very Sohail just taught me what transition and half court meant. Like, a lot of people kept saying they were like, Ben is terrible at half court points, but he's so great at transition. I'm like, what does this mean?
It's like, so, Joel gets the rebound, gives it to Ben, and Ben runs with like four friends, but Joel just kind of jogs behind them all. You've seen that a million times.
Yeah. And, so finally, I've been learning how to put, that's been a thing. So being new to basketball, brand new to basketball, trying to like pick up on a lot of the rules. Like, I have to prepare for this, I got Basketball for Dummies.
Wow, nice.
And then I didn't read it because of work, but so I've been trying to put a lot of the terms to being while watching the games. So I learned I loved Robert Covington while he was here. So I could recognize what deflections are. I could recognize defensive, but I'm still learning. Like, I've recently learned how to identify a pick and roll. Mm. So that's been an adventure for me.
Yeah, a lot of Sixers fans over the years have said, we want Ben Simmons to do more of the role in the pick and roll. Like, maybe George Hill would dribble it, Ben would set the screen and then roll to the hoop.
Yeah.
And so we've seen quite a bit of that, although one of my pet peeves with it is they often do it when, like, Dwight Howard is lingering right in the paint. So there ends up being three defenders when Ben gets there.
I think there was, like, there was a night where, and do you remember the time Embiid and Ben both went in for the ball, like, in the paint, and they both fell down?
We got mad at each other, and, like, Rachel Nichols talked about it?
I don't remember. I think so. I don't remember that part, but they did. I was trying to ask a friend, like, is this normal? Are they supposed to do that? Are they both allowed in the paint at the same time?
Yeah.
So it is kind of, I think they could use better space with Ben. Like I was there when he hit a corner three, like somebody threw, he went to the corner, somebody threw him the shot and he, or ball, and he like hit the three. And so I do think that even I can recognize that he needs to just kind of watch where people are in like different places and be able to move outside.
Art, where are you in the camp on Ben needs to shoot or Ben should just work on the other stuff? Like, don't bother with the shot.
I think in the middle. I think the other part does include like him being able to make more space for the team. So I don't necessarily need more threes, but I think there's a lot of improvement needed. Like, he's an important integral part of the team. Like, we couldn't play Boston without him. He's like, I think he's like our fastest player. So I think he needs to work on both, but he needs to be less scared to be in those moments. Or I don't know if he's scared, but less hesitant.
Can you speak something into existence? Is there something you'd like to speak into existence with the Sixers?
I am really good at speaking things into existence. Like, right, my cards didn't get traded. Okay. What do you want me to speak into existence? Or am I just coming up with this?
Well, you can come up with it. So if you want them to get the one seed, if you want them to play the Knicks in the second round, if you want them to beat the Lakers in the finals, like, whatever you want, here's your opportunity.
I want Mike Scott at the finals parade drinking Jack No Ice. I want him to pull a J.R. Smith. So that is what I'm speaking into existence.
I like that.
We're going to go to the parade and we're all going to celebrate and he'll be there.
I have this vision of Ben Simmons sitting at the podium with his dog that has the red and the blue bow ties in her hair. I don't know the dog's name, but I see her on his Instagram and it's pretty cute. And I just picture, Ben doesn't always show you his personality. So I figure maybe he'll show us a little bit more at the parade or at the post game.
The pets need their own float. I really believe so.
Yeah.
All right. Hive and Ricky both deserve their floats too.
Yeah. Everyone who's been a big, big part of this deserves some sort of float. Will you get a float?
No. I'm just here to enjoy the ride.
And with that, Zeynep, thanks so much for coming on. Do you have anything to plug? Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, ZRJAVED. So I'm ZRJAVED. Find me on Twitter, become friends with me. I do like making friends. I think one of the best part about Twitter is like people reaching out. And so feel free to reach out if you ever need anything.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Bye.
All right. Take care.